This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be. And we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
If he's with me, I'll blink the lights to let you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. We're live here on this Tuesday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 497 of Indeed, the longest running, almost there to five Bills, motherfucking gold standard. You were saying 500 was going to be in 2028, and it's going to be in well short of that, but right around the corner.
Yep.
Getting
excited.
Seven and a half years.
That's not
seven
bad.
Seven and a half years. No, not bad at all. Looking forward to it. Getting excited. Yeah. It's coming together. But how are you, JR? All is well, as usual?
Yeah, not bad. I've had some calamity lately, but I'll point you to both the Wrestling War Zone and No Holds Barred podcasts to catch up on those car-related and cable-related issues. So I'll direct you there for those stories. I won't regale you with them once again.
This isn't the tires, is it? Is this your tire?
Another story issue with the radio. Listen to Wrestling War Zone. If you listen to this week's, it's still to come, Wrestling War Zone, coming out later this week, and then you listen to No Holds Barred from yesterday, you'll get the full story. So.
Okay.
So that's that. Also joining us tonight.
He's back.
How are you? First, I guess. How are you?
I'm well. Things are everything is everything's good. And God, man, it's fucking hot, huh? God, the fucking arsonist court must be. You're trying to dribble on hot fucking pavement. The ball probably sinks in.
Well, we're playing tomorrow night. It's supposed to be a little bit better, but today was fucking disgusting. I mean, it was like
disgusting
being in the
today.
Amazon today. It was like I walked outside and it's just. You feel so it's the air is so heavy. It was like, I think it was like 90% humidity I saw on the app or something like that. So.
Oh, you got you're playing basketball tomorrow night. I have softball tomorrow night. So hopefully cut a little humidity down.
Well, so you're doing some hard labor. Was that part of the chain gang you were working out there? So the
it
big
was
work
chain,
boots
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'm doing more of that Saturday. Yeah. taking care of the convicts. Nails is with us.
Very good. Yeah,
so but working no, hard. But yeah. It's been a good summer. Speaking of red hot, talk about a red hot third member of the team that hasn't been around in a while, but he's blazing back at his desk, JR.
Mm-hmm. That is the one and only, the one of the voices of WorldCast on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, the retired, semi-retired host of At the Garden, and then...
Retired.
Yeah, retired host of At the Garden, and often third man here on the Place to Be podcast. You'll be hearing him again in a few episodes. As part of the trivia contest in episode 500. We'll talk about more of that later. But that is the one and only Mr. Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I'm sweating like you guys. It's not as bad as what you guys are going through, I'm sure, but it's still plenty goddamn hot in Vancouver, Canada right now.
It's a lot of Celsiuses.
Yes, it's high in the high or low 30s Celsius.
There you go. Whatever that means.
You can Google that in America and figure out how much in Fahrenheit that is.
Assuming we care. So before you...
Well, I know you don't.
How are you, Kelly? What's been going on besides the heat? Anything? Doing all right?
No, just working too much and not getting to enjoy wrestling enough.
How's married life?
Oh, married life's great when I see her.
Very good. That's what makes it great.
Yes.
All right. Before we get to tonight's show, guys, and I'm going to let you two mainly to have this discussion because I talked about it a lot on No Holds Barred. Yesterday, the wrestling world lost yet another alumnus, and that was the late now great Jim the Anvil Neidhart passed away yesterday. Had a fall in his home, hit his head, and passed away. Kind of shook the world a bit, and One thing I will say that Aaron and I, we did a whole segment on the Hart Foundation and New Foundation for the GWWE Tag Project on last night's No Holds Barred. So we shared a lot of thoughts on the Anvil. Kind of my lasting impression of the whole thing was just how well known he was. Like, for a guy that you don't think of being like a major player, he was kind of a stalwart of the 80s generation. The name is very familiar. The look, like, I think a lot of non-wrestling fans would just remember Jim the Anvil. And then you get that swath. Then you also get the nostalgic Attitude Era group, right? Not Michael the Domus, but everyone else. Those nostalgic for the Attitude Era will remember him because they love the Hart Foundation angle. And then modern fans may have seen him on like Total Divas with Natty. And so he kind of crossed a lot of generations, and he's a guy that you probably didn't think of just how like much outpouring there would be, but it's been pretty big news. Like, it was on the crawl of the ESPN. It was, you know, on a lot of different websites and news outlets, and you saw it, you know, passed around quite a bit. So that was kind of my impression. It caught me off guard. But as far as, you know, any thoughts on his career and anything about him that you guys want to share, like I said, I'll bow out of that since you can listen to No Holds Bar for that. I'm not going to repeat it. But what did you guys think of, you know, Neidhart and what was going through your heads yesterday?
I mean, we saw him I've seen him a couple of times live, JR. You and I saw him at WrestleCon, what, 4.5 years ago, mm-hmm. Down in Jersey, Mania weekend. And I don't know. Sadly, I feel like his reputation has kind of went down the tubes a little bit because of Total Divas, because he was, you know, dealing with obviously some substance issues.
He had issues earlier in the decade. Didn't he steal the show a lot of times, people are saying?
I know he stole the show, but I mean, I don't know if he was still having other kinds of issues. You know, he got arrested a few years ago for possession and everything like that. And now, of course, he was dealing with, I guess, early onset of Alzheimer's. But to me, he'll always be just the power guy in the Hart Foundation. I mean, I remember thinking it was very odd in 94 when he came back and he was the heel. And like Brett was like bad mouthing him. I carried the teams, and like that was really strange. But it was different, and it sucks. It's sad that, you know, Brett's got to look in the mirror and realize he's the only member of the Hart Foundation left. And what, half of those guys are younger than him? Mm. I mean, Anvil is probably slightly older than him, but obviously he was older than. I mean, Pillman was younger than him. Owen obviously was younger than him, and Bulldog was probably younger than him. Yeah. So I mean, it sucks. It sucks that he's the only one left. You know, it's a bummer. But I'll remember him for being the power guy early on. It was cool seeing some of his Mid-South stuff on the network. Check some of the 1982 Mid-South episodes for a little bit of Neidhart. I mean, obviously you talk a lot about him too, Kel, on your past shows. Kind of a forgotten guy who took advantage of his character and his opportunity. And, he's pretty unforgettable in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main reasons why his death got some mainstream attention, is such a memorable look, personality. Like, he was, his promos, you wouldn't put him in like the top of the line category for promos, but his promos were very memorable.
Yeah.
And he had such a great personality. He was he's just oozed professional wrestler, and he was part of the 80s boom. So that's fondly remembered by a lot of people. So guys who pass away from that era get a lot more publicity than others. Hart Foundation in the 80s was a great WWF tag team, great as heels, and had some good stuff too as baby faces. And yeah, his comebacks. I liked the 94 comeback because he was always more suited to be a heel. He had the heel look, I think. And then it fit in perfectly with Owen being the younger brother going against Brett. And then he, you know, Brett's old partner comes back, but this time he's with Owen. That was great.
Well, we talked about that too last night because, and Scott, you and I kind of relived that when we did those Vintage Vault write-ups. Mm-hmm. I hadn't forgotten how much they played it up. Like, Anvil was actually the poison in Owen's ear. Like, he didn't come back just to back up Owen. They played it off heavily that he was the one that, like, turned Owen, basically, and he was the mastermind behind it all. And, like, all the promos, all the interviews, like, that's really what they did. And it turns eventually, but for the majority, that's early on. Like, that's where they were headed with that angle.
Yeah. Yeah, it was because he came back and was like influencing Owen, and it was a good role for him, and it fit really well. The 97 comeback is going to be always remembered. I was at the Canadian Stampede show. I mean, it's my fondest memory by far, of course, of a live experience for wrestling. It was just such an incredible night, incredible atmosphere. It's funny, in the days leading up to Anvil's death, I suddenly saw him, I saw a few matches of his just randomly. I put on SummerSlam 89 one night when I got home from work just to unwind and watch the whole thing. And of course, the first match is Hearts and Brainbusters, and that's a really fun match. And then the other night, it may have even been, I guess it was the day before he died. My wife and I were at a restaurant that has a lounge section, and I could see what was playing on the TVs in the lounge, and they were playing like Bret Hart's greatest SummerSlam matches.
Only in Canada.
Yeah, only in Canada, of course. And one of them was the cage match against Owen from 1994, where Anvil gets heavily involved in the post-match and that whole great brawl, and with all the Hart family members getting involved and trying to climb the cage, and Anvil's beating them down. And I was, my wife's like, what are you doing? Like, we can't escape wrestling. We go out for dinner and it's fucking playing. And I couldn't help it, because it was first they played Bret and Davey Boy from Wembley, and they played that match. Then they played Bret and Shawn Michaels, or Bret and Undertaker from 97 SummerSlam. So I just couldn't help it. I just had to watch. But yeah, it's funny how Anvil was, in the days preceding his death, I suddenly started seeing him all over the place.
Yeah,
but yeah, super memorable character, and he'll be missed for sure.
I think part of it too had to do with, he died sadly and not like, wasn't drug-related, he didn't kill himself. So I think that's probably leading to some of the outpouring, too. Like, it feels a little bit sadder the way he died. Even though he obviously, like Scott, man, I mean, he's got a bit of a checkered past, obviously. But but the way things went down kind of, I think, added to some of the rallying around it. Because, sad to say, like, for once, it wasn't, like, an ugly death in a way. I mean, it was ugly in a sad, tragic way, but not in a, dark way, I guess, what I'm trying to say. But
not like in a hotel room way.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So my point is, it's sad, but I think the way it happened also has added to some of the outpouring of what's gone on. But I think a lot of it is just that he's super recognizable because of the era he was in and the look and the name and everything like that. So anyway, RIP Jim Neidhart. Obviously, we'll be seeing plenty of him over the next few years here on the Place to Be podcast, including in coming up on our next couple of shows. So more to do then. But Scott, why don't you set us up for tonight's festivities?
All right, let us go to July 25th, 1988. Back at the home office for the third straight month, 33rd and 6th, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Kelly, everything's fine. Your desk looks good. Been a lot of people sitting in it. A couple of ladies have been sitting in it, so
yes.
So you're definitely a downgrade in that aspect.
Yes. That's fine.
We're going to send Criscola through sensitivity training here at the Place to Be podcast.
Yeah, for Kelly? Yeah, right. You're the one trashing his useless weather. All right, so the roster is actually pretty spread out on this Monday night. We have three other shows around the country, and all of them different groups. Like, there's no matinees. So spread very thin. So four shows tonight, and the roster is pretty spread out. We will go west. We'll start closest in and then go west. We will begin at the Haldane Community Center in Pulaski, New York. Crowd of just over 1,000.
Jesus. Is this the bar that Kelly was at dinner at the other night?
Here is your card. Or this is what our friend at Mr. Graham Cawthon from the history of WWE.com has. The Blue Angel pinned Terry Gibbs with a sunset flip.
Blue
Angel. The Killer Bees defeated the Conquistadors. The Iron Sheik pinned Jerry Allen after a kick to the head. God.
88 Iron Sheik against Jerry Allen. Geriatric versus Jerry Allen.
Yeah. Dino Bravo pinned Ken Patera. And the Junkyard Dog, subbing for Bam Bam Bigelow, we all obviously know why, pinned the One Man Gang. So next, we will go to the Ohio Center in Columbus, Ohio. And no, we will not see the great Frankie Williams on this evening. But here's the card. Scott Casey defeated Iron Mike Sharp. You're kind of wondering why they really spread the roster out this thin with some of these matches so far. The Ultimate Warrior defeated The Menace. The Big Boss Man defeated Sam Houston. Bad News Brown did defeat the late, great Jim Neidhart. Rick Rude defeated Jake Roberts via countout. Brutus Beefcake defeated your Intercontinental Champion, the Honky Tonk Man, by DQ. And in the main event, your World Wrestling Federation Champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage, defeated Ted DiBiase. And finally, I have no clue where the hell this place is. 302 people went to some building. Graham does not have the building. In Portales, New Mexico.
Oh, my God.
This has to be a charity thing or some kind of fucking high school thing. It has to be. DJ Peterson defeated Billy Anderson. What do you think, Kel? A couple locals?
That was your main event.
No, that was your curtain. That was your opener. It might as well have been. Sensational Sherry defeated Rockin' Robin. Paul Roma and... this match is terrible. Oh, my God. Paul Roma and subbing for Jim Powers, Omar Atlas.
Oh, my God.
Defeated Barry Horowitz and the great C.V. Afi.
Oh, God. C.V. Afi can't even win that match. it's
God.
Fitting, by the way. We haven't really talked too much about C.V., but Kelly's here, so of course he had to come up. That's a,
yes.
That was our boy.
Coco Beware had to lay down for guess who? Frenchie Martin. And the main event, Tito Santana pinned Outlaw Ron Bass.
Oh, God. Wow. That was a rough
I feel bad for those 302 bastards.
They didn't get paid much that night.
And I wonder if there was any. I don't wonder if there's any air conditioning in this July evening in Portales, New Mexico. So that's where they were on this Monday evening. Pulaski, New York, Columbus, Ohio, and Portales, New Mexico.
The Hank Schrader Memorial Show there in New Mexico. But it was not the best turnout, but it was okay.
All right, JR, what are there any other news and notes before we dive in?
Yeah, it's a meaty one. On the 7288 Superstars, in an update segment, Bobby Heenan announced he'd crown a new king the following week to replace Harley Race. We talked about that a bit on our last episode. And during a match featuring the Hart Foundation, there was an insert promo from Jimmy Hart where he said even though the Hart Foundation did not want him at ringside anymore, he still legally owned their contracts. A week later, there was a coronation ceremony as Bobby Heenan crowned Haku as the new king. Many of the heels on the roster were present for the coronation, and Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth, which was interrupted by Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan, with Andre distracting Savage long enough for DiBiase to sneak up and attack him from behind as Virgil held Liz and forced her to watch as Savage was triple-teamed by DiBiase, Andre, and Heenan. A week later, there was an update focusing on the previous week's attack, and Savage made a challenge for DiBiase and Andre to face him and a partner of his choice. Later that night, the Powers of Pain made their Dirty F TV debut, defeating Tony Ulysses and Iron Mike Sharp. Mr. Fuji was at ringside taking photographs of the Powers of Pain, and Slick was also seen in the audience scouting them. Hopefully those aren't leaked from any cell phones. 7/23/88 Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with DiBiase, Virgil, Andre, and Heenan, where they accepted Randy Savage's offer, and DeGeorge revealed that Jesse Ventura had been selected for the guest referee for that match. And Sean Mooney made his WWF TV debut on May 15th, 1988, Wrestling Challenge. And somewhere a young Parv looked to the heavens and said, thank you, God. Sean Mooney. Okay, so that brings us to our show. And Sean Mooney is making his MSG debut, teaming with, of course, superstar Billy Graham and Lord Alfred Hayes. They run down tonight's card and take us to our opening match, and that is Leaping Lanny Poffo taking on Terry Taylor, another newcomer here, born Paul Warden Taylor III on August 12, 1955 in Greenville, popular fan favorite for much of his early career in Mid-South, as well as Mid-Atlantic, was selected to be part of the Fabulous Ones with Stan Lane, but that role went to Steve Kern instead. Taylor formed a tag team with Bobby Fulton called the Fantastic Ones. After they split up, Fulton and Tommy Rogers became the Fantastic. Seems like he's always kind of the bridesmaid
that gets
dumped.
Second choice.
On June 7th, 81, he won the NWA Junior Heavyweight title from Les Thornton in Roanoke and then made his way to Mid-South in January of 84 to feud with the team of Nikolai Volkoff and Crusher Darso. Taylor made his Taylor feuded with Nature Boy Buddy Landell on the over the NWA National Heavyweight title in 1985, defeated Ted DiBiase for the North American Heavyweight title, Mid-South's, of course, top regional title at the time. Moving back to Mid-South in 86, which he had broken away from the NWA, became renamed the Universal Wrestling Federation. Taylor became one of the promotion's biggest stars, defeated Buzz Sawyer for the TV title. And after Jim Crockett Promotions bought the UWF, Taylor went there. He got into a dispute with Nikita Koloff over the TV title, and that led to unification of their belts at Starrcade, which Taylor would lose before abruptly leaving. Debuted in World Class in early 88, stayed there until early June when he jumped ship here to the WWF. So a lot going on for old Terrence. And here's his debut against our stalwart, Leaping, as Gorilla, of course, would call him, who hasn't been to the Garden since last August. That's a while for us not to see Leaping. He was around a lot.
I agree.
Good heat on Taylor, and then Poffo reads his poem, putting over Billy Graham. We get some stalling and feeling out as Al gives Taylor's background and says he's mainly competed in the South, but he's seasoned and wily. Billy says Poffo's slick, and Taylor opens with a pair of arm drags in place to the crowd. Poffo answers right back. It's a flurry, preens for a bit. Taylor bails and returns and works the wrist and arm, but Poffo hangs on and regains control. Graham calls Poffo supple. Says he'll get into all sorts of gyrations with his gymnastics. The crowd has already turned on this as Al says Lanny warms up a lot backstage to get his body completely supple. Poffo keeps outwitting Taylor and grinding him down. Taylor drops Poffo on his head and gets to work, and Billy just roasts him for lazy pin covers. Poffo eats a knee on a charge. Taylor keeps pounding away and working a chin lock. Taylor yanks Poffo to the floor and stands around in place of the crowd. Poffo comes in with a sunset flip, but Taylor kneels down and grabs the rope for help. But the ref breaks that up after botching it initially. Poffo gets a pair of near falls, but Taylor keeps slugging away. Poffo blocks a suplex and gets one of his own and then starts slugging back, which Billy is happy over. Taylor's wobbling as Poffo gets his moonsault off the middle rope for a real close near fall. Taylor comes back with a shinbreaker and gets a scorpion for the win. This was fine. I thought Poffo showed some nice fire and offense and selling. I thought Taylor was fine as well, played to the crowd. But I thought he wrestled kind of dumb throughout most of the match. Honestly, and they really don't hesitate to call that out in commentary. The finish was good, and I thought the Scorpion looked pretty nasty the way he cinched it in and got the quick victory. Graham says Taylor needs more body weight if he wants to stick around. Graham basically becomes a de facto, like Vince McMahon, like in all these. Like, he just talks about guys' size constantly and how they're not going to do anything if they're not big enough. So, Scott, I went 2 stars on this.
I went 2 stars on it as well. And actually, this was not Terry Taylor's first MSG match. As a matter of fact, his last match in the building was October 20th, 1980.
Yeah.
He actually defeated Jose Estrada by an abdominal stretch into a roll-up, Mr. Nelson. I'm sure you discussed that match.
No, that one didn't make the Titans footage, but I have seen at least parts of it. There was a lot of guys coming in from other territories back in those days for one shots, and yeah, he was one of them.
So that was the last time he was here. By the way, I counted six. First off, where is Gorilla? People keep talking about Gorilla's health, but the night before he was with his boy Billy Red Lions at the Maple Leaf Gardens, so Gorilla is not out sick.
No, he's in the building because you see him later when in the lumberjack match he comes out with the other officials.
Right.
So he was actually in the building.
Yeah, maybe he just wanted to give a break and work Mooney and other guys in. And he's just doing gorilla position stuff. And, you know, maybe they just figured they needed him to run the show and let the other guys do some commentary to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, maybe Vince wasn't there, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he was in Portales, New Mexico booking that show. All right, CB Offa, you're going to have to lay down for Omar Atlas. I won't give it away, but it is quite a while before we see Gorilla behind the mic in the building again. I won't say when, but it will be a while. So I counted six times in this match we heard the word supple, and I knew that Alfred was going to say supple eventually, but when he actually said that Lanny got himself nice and supple backstage.
He gets into multiple positions to get himself supple.
To get himself supple. I don't know if that was the usual, Steve Lombardi, Terry Garvin innuendo.
Oh, I think it definitely was.
He's
blowing himself backstage.
But Graham says it, and it was very weird hearing him say it, like, yeah, baby, he's going to get nice and supple out there.
Look how supple he is, baby. Too bad he's
supple, baby.
you know.
Too bad he's quadruple jointed, my man. I can't wait to see that. No.
Look at that anyway. Scrawny bitch, Terry Taylor, out there.
He's a big whiner, baby. I think he's nothing but a whiner. That's what he kept saying. I thought the match was fine. It kind of went through the motions. I mean, obviously, Terry Taylor is not a bad wrestler. He was very popular around the other territories. He was like, wasn't he? Watching the 81 Mid-Atlantics, I remember they kept saying constantly he was like the NWA Rookie of the Year or whatever. So yeah. He obviously got some pub through the southern territories, but clearly he did not want to. I don't know what made him go to World Class in 88. I mean, wasn't that ship sinking in 88? I mean, why would you go there of all places instead of coming here earlier? I don't know, it's odd. Anyway, a decent match, Kel. I gave it 2 stars. Lanny was supplely doing his job with his 50 joints, and halfway decent opener.
Yeah, better than most of the openers, I suppose. I've never really been a Terry Taylor guy.
Nobody is. Show me anyone who's a Terry Taylor guy. Like, my favorite Terry Taylor fact at Place to Be Nation is that he had 2 votes. Nominations for the greatest dirty wrestler ever, and no one, every fucking scrub possible got like enough votes to get nominated, yeah. And nobody cared enough to give Terry Taylor a 3rd fucking vote, so he wasn't even in consideration for the fucking. I mean, look at the guys that were on that goddamn list, and no one gave a shit enough. Like, there were guys who would just go in and upvote a 3rd for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, no one stopped to give Terry Taylor a 3rd vote. No one cares. Nobody is a Terry Taylor guy. He's, like, the most blah guy ever.
It's funny you mentioned it, because during the Lumberjack match, when everyone's introduced, he gets, you know, most guys get boos or cheers. He gets silence.
Yeah, like, Terry.
So he's total indifference for Terry Taylor. That sums up
his name, Mr. Indifference, Terry Taylor.
Career. My favorite Terry Taylor was Terrence Taylor in the York Foundation, actually. For some reason, I felt that role fit him. And then later, he was in a short-lived tag team with Greg the Hammer Valentine that I loved at the time, mostly because of Hammer.
Yeah, 92. But, yeah,
the 92 U.S. champions. But other than that, yeah. I mean, gosh. Even tonight, watching this match, I could swear that he had the Red Rooster streak in his hair as I was watching it. It's like, that's so ingrained in my mind or something. I don't know. It's weird. Speaking of foreshadowing, Graham calls Poffo a genius for his poem.
He's a supple genius.
Supple genius who can do, quote, incredible things with his body. Yeah, the innuendo was, all 3 of them were just going crazy on it.
Oh, my
God. Wow. Boring chance, no heat, but it was okay action-wise and psychology. Taylor played the cocky heel, not too bad here. Some good near falls by Poffo. And then I forgot Taylor actually used the future sharpshooter as his finisher, called the Scorpion, and Al called it the Boston Figure Four, which is my favorite name for it now. 1.5 stars for me.
Right. Anything Alfred makes up is funny. Your match time, by the way, 9:52. The first of a myriad of exceptionally long matches on this evening. Not a lot of quick ones tonight. A lot of marathons, not many sprints, JR.
He's got a supple penis, brother. Look at him. All right, up next, another debut, a big debut, and that is the tag team of the Rockers making their MSG arrival, taking on the fabulous Rougeau brothers and the Rockers, comprised of Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels. They met, struck up a friendship when they were competing for the Central States Wrestling Territory in 1985. In May of 85, they defeated the Batten Twins to win the NWA Central States Tag Titles. The first reign was very short-lived. In early 86, they were signed by the AWA to replace some of the talent that had jumped ship to the WWF. They were paired up by the bookers and suggested the name the Country Rockers, or the U.S. Express. Not keen on the idea of the two of them, came up with the name Midnight Rockers, inspired by Judas Priest's Living After Midnight. The two started wearing identical outfits, developing kind of a, you know, pretty boy, fun-loving, you know, partying gimmick. After wrestling on the low end of the card, fans familiar with the team, they soon moved on to a feud with Doug Summers and Buddy Rose, who, of course, is a very famous, you know, and great feud. Some of the matches they had were, you know, really well known and famous, of course. Their initial outing with Summers of Rose at Wrestle Rock Stadium Show, April 2086, did not go well for Jenny and Michaels. They lost, repeatedly challenged the two throughout 86, but never got that big win. Near the end of the year, the Rockers defeated the champs in a non-title steel cage match on Christmas Day 1986 at the Brawl in St. Paul, and a month later, they finally won the tag belts. But they realized the AWA is in decline, and their best bet was to go to the WWF. They got that offer and jumped. Made their debut while still holding the AW, or they signed while still holding the AWA gold, losing to Boris Zukov and sold out to Ustinov on May 25th, 87. Made their first appearance in 87, only 5 days after dropping those AWA titles. They debuted in St. Paul. They challenged the Hoffa Nation for a title match, then wrestled at a TV taping, defeating Jose Estrada Sr. and Jimmy Jack Funk. But that'd be the only appearance because they ran afoul. Backstage, Shawn Michaels will claim that they're innocent, and however the story goes, they were partying too hard, and Vince McMahon fired them to send a message. They went back to they couldn't just go back to the AWA, of course, because they had the way they had left, so they went to Memphis for a bit, and then went back to the AWA once Memphis made their agreement there, defeated the original Midnight Express for the AWA tag titles in late 87. After a short stint there, they wanted more money from Vern Gagne. That was denied. They lost the tag titles to Bad Company. And they were contacted by Vince McMahon saying he was willing to bring them back around, but they had to be more professional this time. They agreed, inked a deal, and here we be, taking on the Rougeaus, a hot tag match on paper. You got something to say? You got something? You can say something. Were you going to say something?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I was agreeing with you.
Well, maybe we should pause for 1 second. Do either of you want to talk about the Rockers pre-WWF? I wouldn't mind a breather.
I love their feud in AWA. You know, it's funny because Summers and obviously Buddy Rose, who wouldn't be as pleasantly plump as he would be when he would come back here later in the decade, but it was a good dichotomy between these two young, good-looking guys and these two kind of weird-looking dudes, yet they just could not beat them for the tag titles. I would argue that it's one of the AWA's better feuds of the middle part of the 80s. One of the few feuds that Vern actually booked well. I thought they were really great. And I kind of believe Sean, because I guess the whole backstory had to do with Jimmy Jack Funk and Jesse Barr kind of goading them into drinking a lot and that kind of thing. So I kind of believe Sean for once in this time anyway. Because clearly they got a second chance. If Vince was that pissed, they wouldn't have been able to come back. So, but again, and I'll get more into it in my match comments. Vince is obviously looking ahead to beefing up the tag division because a lot of these tag teams he has now are kind of on the way out. But anyway, Kel, your thoughts on Rockers?
Oh yeah, the Rockers are one of my favorite tag teams ever. Right from the get-go, when I was reading the magazines and watching a bit of the ESPN AWA show on TV in Canada. That was right when they were feuding with Summers and Rose, and you're right, Scott, like the dichotomy between the two teams was perfect because Rose and Summers were out of shape or looked perceived to be out of shape and, not good looking, claiming to be pretty boys. And, it was a great feud. The matches are amazing. The one from the Showboat Pavilion in Las Vegas that was on the ESPN show, known as Blood in the Sand, is one of the best tag matches you'll ever see.
Yep.
Total bloodbath, both teams bleeding. I think all four guys bleed. And it's just crazy. The cage match in St. Paul is really good, too. They have another cage match in Las Vegas, so it's really good. And they maybe waited a bit too long to pull the trigger on the title change. And then things kind of sputtered after that. But it was because they actually... You know, they were one of the few AWA acts to attract attention, you know, as far as like Vince wanting them. So they were really hot. And right after they won the titles, they pretty much, you know, were ready to go to the WWF, dropped the belts, you know, in haste to the Russian team. And then from what I know, what actually was going on at the time, why they were fired so quickly, it was just bad timing because Duggan and Sheik had been busted publicly together with drugs, and Jake and Brian Blair also had drug issues. So there was a whole bunch of drug problems going on, and Vince really wanted to send a message and get the locker room under control. And when the Rockers came in, this is when that was all going down. So it was kind of bad timing. I think, you know, a couple months earlier, if they came in and there was a incident at a bar, it wouldn't have been that bad. But it just happened to occur when Vince was cracking down on that stuff. So that's why they were fired so quickly. And, I mean, it all worked out for them eventually. But, yeah, great, all-time great tag team. So many great matches coming up to enjoy. Like, wow, the next few years are just one after the next for the Rockers. It's going to be a great ride.
Yeah, it'll be great to watch them, too, as they progress. Obviously, you know, as Aaron and I mentioned last night, they're in, and many have as well, I think they're, you know, in the short list for top five spots on the GWW tag team, if not number one. You know, I think they're on the list of possible contenders with some other teams. So it'll be interesting to see where they finish. All right, so here we go. Newly arrived Rockers, solidly heel Rougeaus. Rockers get a huge pop. Mooney says the Rougeaus are top title contenders. Michaels and Jacques open up with a stalemate and some feeling out, trading off basics. Billy shits on the Rougeaus' Americana talk, but Al says he's been fine with their talk in action so far. Jacques levels Sean with a stiff dropkick, offers Michaels a handshake. Jacques works a side headlock, and Sean eventually out-hustles him and grazes him with a dropkick to a pop. Sean mockingly offers a handshake back in a pretty funny spot. Ray and Marty tag in. Ray hooks a Phil Nelson. Marty powers free, and we reset. The two trade a couple of shots, and Jacques tags back in as we're moving at a real kind of a slow pace here. Sean comes back in too, but Jacques takes him down and works the leg. Sean breaks free, tags Marty, who gets to the arm, and the Rockers quick tag and alternate battering Jacques' arm. Graham talks about his continuity being what the Rougeaus are known for. The Rockers are known for. Jacques is able to land a shot to the back, and the Rougeaus take over and zero in on the lumbar of Marty. Graham says he knew this would get rougher eventually. The back work continues with a mix of strikes and an abdominal stretch. Marty eventually dodges a cross body block, and the crowd rallies him to make the tag. Sean comes in hot, cleans house, eventually hits a flying fist drop off the top, but Ray makes the save on the cover. Sean goes up again, but Jacques shoves him off the top, and Ray covers for the win, and the crowd was not happy with that one. The British Bulldogs come out. They argue with the ref over the finish, and they knock the Rougeaus to the floor. That was a fun match. It felt like it was on the cusp of going next level, but it just never clicked to the next gear to get really heated up. It's kind of a long intro. You get a pretty good heat, a hot finish, but it all felt like just like the first paces of what could have been a real classic. A nice appetizer, though, of what's to come for both of these teams in these roles. So I went 3 stars on this one, Kelly.
Yeah, I like this one, too. This was a flashback to my old podcast. To tag teams back again with Marty Sleaze. We watched this match, and we also watched the Demos Bulldogs match that's coming up. And yeah, I really, this time around, enjoyed the Rougeaus' heel performance. And because it's really subtle, or it was subtle, slowly becoming heels. You guys talked about it on the last show. They were against the Conquistadors, who were a heel team, so they were slowly turning the Rougeaus' heels, and now they're going against a babyface team. Lord Al on commentary, though, is still giving them a chance, like you mentioned, JR, not totally committing to them being underhanded and cheating. Superstore totally trashes them on commentary. But really good storytelling here with the whole Rougeaus being insincere, which was a unique heel personality at the time. You know, they were heels who were insisting they were still baby faces. And I've really come to appreciate them more and more over the years, watching their matches as heels. I thought I think they're probably one of the best heel acts in the company, like 88, 89, 90, as far as consistency and getting over their personalities, their heel personalities. And they were entertaining, too. And the Rockers are the perfect foils for them because they are, you know, actually sincere. They're sympathetic, good-looking young guys. Everybody loves them. They're everything the Rougeaus are not. And, yeah, this match, yeah, it didn't hit the next level, that's for sure. But it was really good storyline-wise because it played up the feud that the Rougeaus are having with the Bulldogs. It plays up Michaels and Jannetty being new to the territory and, you know, inexperienced. And so them losing, you know, that's understandable. And, you know, it was an underhanded way, of course, the way they lost. Gives more heat to the Rougeaus.
Yeah,
and
they needed
the work
it too.
Was good.
The Rougeaus needed it. I mean, because at the tail end of their face run, they were losing quite a bit and not really doing anything. So they need some wins to be looked at as credible with this new gimmick for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to get the new heel gimmick over. Jannetty and Michaels losing, well, that's going to be kind of what they do. They'll have great matches, but you know they'll be always the team eventually losing. That's kind of like their whole thing and their whole run in the WWF, and in a way in the AWA too. It was like that. Yeah, just great action at the end. Great flying fist drop by Shawn off the top rope. But this is where it all goes wrong for the Rockers. He goes for it again, and he gets crotched by Jacques. And yeah, the whole thing with the Bulldogs happens. So yeah, I like this one. I give it 3 stars. They will have much better matches in the future, these two teams. And this one was a good first chapter, though.
I love this match. I gave it actually 3.5 stars. I really, really enjoyed it. Your match time, the first of many double digits tonight, 14:59. And that's fine with me. I'll take 15 minutes with these two teams any day. I'm just glad that we finally have like the full-blown Rougeos now instead of all this like fucking around and maybe, maybe not, and then pretending their faces when we know they're really not kind of thing. I'm just glad they're full-blown now. Even though they're still not really acting it, still saying that they have great fans. And I thought they were going to say something about the Bulldogs later in the show, which I'll get into when we talk about, when we do the interviews. But Rockers were a breath of fresh air. There's no doubt about it, because there really was no team. Even the Bees, who you would think were maybe the most high-flying of the teams in the WWF, weren't this good.
No,
as
close.
Sean and Marty were. Not at all. You know, not at all. Not even close. Are the Bees a good team? Absolutely. But they, you know, they didn't have the type of aerial athleticism you would expect from two guys, from those two, that you definitely got from Sean and Marty. They countered each other well. And it's a great example, and you mentioned it, Kel, of the storytelling that the Rockers will have from here on out, at least for the next, like, maybe year and a half, 2 years, of really putting on fantastic matches and either, like, some schmozzy ending or they end up getting fucked and losing in the end. Really, the focus is how good the match is going to be. Do we really care how it ends? And that's how you kind of look at it with the Rockers. But having said that, I mean, these two danced a great dance tonight, and the crowd was into it. Considering when we read the other three cards with the rest of the roster tonight, the star power was minimal on this evening. Savage, I mean, obviously Hogan not wrestling. He's still on his hiatus. Savage was in another town. Honky was in another town. Jake, you know, Rude. Like, a lot of the real major players are not here tonight. So the goal was to really – they really had to push hard to get these matches over. And so a perfect opportunity to debut the Rockers here at the Garden when the card needed a little meat. And we're going to see a lot of meat later. But to really need a match like this – was huge to make this card flow. So a good night for the Rockers to debut a fantastic match. Again, I liked it. Obviously, a little bit more than you guys, 3.5. Maybe the one of the best matches we've had in the building this year, this calendar year for me. And it's only going to get better, because when we get to later in the year, when we get some more debuts, and then it's just going to get better and better. So this is a great prologue to what's going to be a wonderful story told by the tag teams in the WWF, and it starts here. So a fantastic match that sets you up to come for the next like 18 months in the company. Great match.
All right. Howard Finkel promotes SummerSlam, which is coming to Madison Square Garden next month, compares it to WrestleMania 1, really puts it over, and then Mooney, Allen, Graham joining the excitement around that announcement. So more to come on that tonight. And we'll get into that later. That sets up our third match. That's Bret the Hitman Hart taking on his old buddy, Dangerous Danny Davis. The Hart Foundation split apart here. Looks his former allies collide. Davis gets booed as always, busy hanging on here as a job boy. Graham tries to explain the situation. The Harts are in with Jimmy Hart, holding him to the contract. And Bret says Bret's making a statement by taking this match against Jimmy's old boy, Danny Davis. Davis bails early after a Hart flurry. He regroups on the floor. Al calls Davis a wary customer. Hart picks apart the shoulder and dominates the action as Davis escapes and regroups, calls him. Davis eventually gets an opening lens and thumbs to the eyes. Al calls him a dangerous little fellow and a tough little man. Davis works some soft strikes and a chin lock using his drawstring. Brett mounts a comeback, working through his offense, eventually getting the win with a stiff pile driver to a big pop. Basically a squash with a chin lock by Davis that lasted a little bit too long, but not much doing. You know, Brett, his face turn keeps evolving. He's being showcased as a solo. We're seeing a lot of that come out, and he was good in this match, and I like the finish. I want to give him a star and a half. I mean, I thought Brett worked pretty well. Davis is soft as chicken shit, but and I like, you know, that they kind of tied in the Jimmy Hart angle through and wove that into here as well. So what did you think of this one, Scott?
I thought this was pretty it was all right. I gave it a star. My issue with this match was I did not like the first off 9:35, way too long. Enough with Danny Davis as a viable guy. He's not. Brett should have won this match in like 3 minutes. He is not a credible wrestler. Can we just get over it and move on? The fact that Brett had to struggle with this guy for 9.5 minutes is kind of stupid. He's not in their class, period. And to put him in to make him have to battle for 9.5 minutes with him is pretty shitty, to be honest. I get that he was in, you know, they were once partners or together, whatever, and he was in the Hart Foundation and all that kind of stuff. But he's not Brett. I mean, yeah, 88 Brett is not Brett, who we would see in the future. But still, he's better than Danny Davis. So I was a little perplexed as to why this match had to be this long and how Brett had to kind of struggle. It makes no sense at all. He should have beat the shit out of him in an extended squash in like 3.5 minutes and be done with it. I just didn't get it. I didn't get why the match had to be this long, and it wasn't even that good. So, Kel, a star for me. And, I mean, am I making sense? Like, should this match have been this long and should it have been this competitive? It's Danny fucking Davis at this point, you know? I mean, he's losing practical squashes to George Animal Steel, yet he gets to go 9.5 minutes with a guy that can't even hold, you know, that he couldn't hold his boots to. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It bothered me for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my first notes was that Brett rolled up Davis in a small package and that in the opening seconds, and that's where the match probably should have ended, with like a flash small package quick win over Davis, because yeah, after this it was pretty dull. Davis has zero credibility as anyone other than someone who should get squashed. I mean, he lost to freaking Sam Houston, for Christ's sakes. Clean. It's funny that they mentioned that he's still a member, Davis is still a member of the Hart Foundation, because I don't think Jimmy Hart's been accompanying him to the ring for like several months now, right?
Definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not part of the story anymore, but whatever.
Yeah, I think it's just a way to add a little extra heat to Dave, right?
Right.
You know, just, oh, yeah, he's
right.
Still affiliated with Jimmy Hart, you know?
Yeah, even though he's not there. And the commentators clearly point out that Hart, you know, can't even be bothered to come to the ring with him. Davis using the drawstring choke thing. That was some old school healing. But Davis just so limited as a wrestler. And thank God it ended when it did. Not a good match. But yeah, 1.5 stars. I mean, it's Bret Hart. I couldn't have Bret in a match lower rated than Poffo against Terry Taylor, could I? I'd be, you know, I'd lose my Canadian citizenship, I guess.
All right. We roll on with our next match, and that is The Rock, Don Morocco, taking on Greg the Hammer Valentine. Finally, the Hammer gets something worthwhile, as the stupid stuff with George Steele has done. This feud, of course, triggered last month on TV and MSG. We reheat it here. Morocco gets a big pop, comes out to Jesus Christ Superstar, hugs Graham at ringside. Morocco comes in hot, unloads on the Hammer, punches and forearms, and tries to yank off the shin guard. Valentine sneaks out to the floor and gathers himself as Graham talks about his prep talk with Morocco. Hammer comes back and charges. Morocco dodges him and slams him into the post. Morocco slings him into the post again and runs him shoulder first into the post one more time. Graham says he's waiting for a doctor's note for that shin breaker, pad. As Morocco keeps battering the shoulder and arm, Graham gushes over Morocco's body, of course, takes some shots at Dino Bravo along the way. Hammer lands some hard punches to rattle Morocco, hits a clubbing shot off the top for two. Hammer uses his strength to keep Morocco pinned to the mat as they fight over keeping Morocco's arms down. Donnie Boy fires up and slugs away as Graham says Don will show no mercy as Hammer begs off. Morocco buries shoulders to the gut. Graham taunts Hammer, gets in his face as Morocco slingshots Hammer throat first into the bottom rope. Morocco can't put Hammer away. Greg mounts a comeback, hits an axe off the top. Hammer starts to work the leg and wear down the Rock with some stiff elbows to the head. And then Hammer starts getting disrespectful, slapping Morocco across the face, maliciously battering the leg as Morocco puts over Don's, Graham puts over Don's toughness. Hammer goes for the figure four. Morocco fights through it. Hammer goes right back to softening the knee, turns the shin pad around and tries again, but Morocco gets a small package for a really good near fall. Morocco hulks up and shakes off Hammer's onslaught, firing up the crowd as he won't go down. Morocco gets a big falling power slam, keeps punching away, and eventually yanks off Hammer's shin guard, but the bell sounds for a draw as Morocco smacks him one last time. Hammer slugs Morocco to the floor and goes over and kicks Superstar down and clubs away at him until Morocco makes a save with a chair and then pounds away on Hammer in the aisle. This was really hard-hitting. Both guys busted their asses, and the crowd was really into it. The extra heat from the angle with Graham on commentary helped a lot, too. And Morocco, again, say it every month, Scott. He's really been good in this role. I've enjoyed him as the face, the fiery face with Graham by his side. And Hammer still just tossing bombs like a champ. So I went 2.5 on this, Kel.
Yeah, this was a weird one for me. At times during this match, I was kind of not too interested, especially when Morocco was on offense. He was moving so slowly. That spot where he picked up Hammer and tried to ram him into the ring post was just done in slow motion. But when Hammer was in control, it was really good. Stiff strikes. And Don was pretty good at selling in this match. Just when he was on offense, I just wasn't too into it. I love Jesus Christ Superstar, though, as an entrance theme. That just makes anybody uses it, like, awesome. Makes the match feel like it's going to be epic. It's an epic entrance, pumped up the crowd. Totally. This had a good story behind it, you know, Valentine hurt Graham. Graham's at ringside, so there was some drama. And the closing stretch was good. Good leg psychology, good selling for Morocco. And, you know, this is where it picked up. And, yeah, the struggle to put the figure four on was good. And Hogan made a Hogan-like comeback. Like you said, JR, no selling Hammer's blows. And, yeah, it was a long one. But, yeah, it finished off pretty well. And it was kind of a blow-off to the whole angle, the way it ended in the post-match with Graham getting to use the chair on Hammer. Felt like they were ending this already. So I went, 2 stars on this. Valentine's still really good at this point. It's just Morocco, he's good at selling, but being on offense in the first 10 minutes or so, wasn't good.
It was a bit too much offense from him early, because he has been really good at the selling and then the hot comebacks.
Yeah.
Which is why I think this role has actually been good from the heel turn, from the face turn. Because when he was a heel, we were seeing too much offense at the end there. Now it's like.
Exactly.
You know, we're just going to see him kind of play to a strength, which is funny because, you know, it doesn't look like that would be a strength, but it is.
It totally is a strength. Yeah, it's right. His offense is not good, but his selling and working underneath is pretty good. So, yeah, this was okay.
Fink is back out. Oh, I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I gave it 2.5. All right, guys, it was a 20-minute draw. How off do you think they were?
I'm going to say 18:45.
Kel?
I'll say they actually went past 20 minutes.
JR is closer. 18:41.
Ooh, close.
So they weren't even. So they were like almost 90 seconds off for the fucking 20 minutes, which is ludicrous. Yeah, Graham might as well gone in the ring and fucking, you know, Poffo blown him. I mean, it was getting utterly ridiculous. He's gonna, you know, Billy Graham is rigging slammies so Morocco wins. It's like it was getting kind of outrageous, but
it was like his son. Yeah, I mean, that's how he talked about him. He was like just an overbearing dad, you know.
Exactly. But yes, I will. For the first time, JR, in a while, we saw the old Morocco in the sense that. He should not be having these extended offensive segments. That's not his specialty anymore. And to have that much offense early on just doesn't work. It should have been a reverse. this is like one of those cool, like, all-star matches. You have two awesome, phenomenal heels, kind of faces of the company through the first, you know, 3.5 years of our journey in the pay-per-view era. And it ended up being solid, but it could have been sketched out better, where Hammer should have gotten some more offense in. I dig the storyline with Billy Graham, and I like how it kind of serpentine there to the end with him attacking him at the end, and then they have the big brawl afterwards. So obviously they're not done with this yet. You would have thought maybe they wrestle again at SummerSlam, but we see they don't. But it was good for what it was. But Morocco definitely is better at short spurts of offense rather than trying to dictate tempo. Obviously, the last couple of years he was a heel, he sucked at it. So they were not smart to have him do it again. And he did it a lot here, so they probably could have avoided that. And I think we could have gotten a better match out of it if you just let Hammer do the work early on and Morocco does the comebacks.
Yeah, we'll see that happens with SummerSlam, right? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of matches that should have happened there and that we don't quite get.
I know. So
this would have been one of them because it's been going for a while now, like the Hammer stuff.
Almost a month and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
Longer than that.
All right, Fink is back out. He hypes SummerSlam some more. Says the ticket prices will be discloses the ticket prices will be higher than usual due to the quality, and full card will be announced later tonight. Graham rips Valentine as he recovers from his attack, and Al says he hopes he stays seated from now on for his own safety. That brings us to our tag team title match on the evening, and that is Demolition defending the belts against the British Bulldogs in a rematch from the April Saturday night's main event. The Bulldogs continue hanging in the title picture. Good reception for them. Demolition gets a big pop as they strut out with their awesome presence. Davey gets off to a fast start Smash, and gets a 2 on a sunset flip until the champ bails. Davey continues to control and work the arm as Graham says the Bulldogs have more muscles than their larger opponents. The challengers tag on and off and focus on the arm as Billy gushes over Dynamite's lifting regiment. Smash works free and tags Axe, who just wrecks Dynamite with clubbing blows. Dynamite comes back and powers Axe down and goes to the arm. Axe's comeback gets cut off quickly as the arm work continues. Axe continues, or eventually lands a headbutt and tags out, but Dynamite trips up Smash and grounds him. Davey swaps in and keeps the arm tied up as Fuji tries to get involved. Smash slugs his way into control, but Davey hits a hard Axe handle off the middle rope for a good near fall. Davey slams Smash and tags Dynamite, who hits a falling headbutt off the middle rope for 2. Smash is able to bump Davey to the floor and then follows up and spikes him to the apron. Back inside, the champs get to work battering Davey with strikes and a chin lock and eventually a nerve hold. The heat segment ebbs and flows as Davey takes a beating. Al talks about how well Fuji preps his men as they keep Davey tied up. Davey finally breaks free and gets a hot tag to Dynamite. Runs through both champs with ease, getting a near fallen Axe with a falling headbutt. Dynamite's rattled from the headbutt and Smash levels him from the apron. The champs are back on top. They mix in some double teaming. Axe gets 2 on a suplex and tags Smash. Dynamite gets a desperation clothesline and tags Davey, who wails away at Axe, but Axe blocks a pile driver with a backdrop. Smash comes in and lands some blows, and the champs go back on top for a third time. Davey slugs Axe, but gets 2 as Axe dumps Davey to the floor as he kicks out. Smash fetches Davey and goes back to the chin lock. Davey powers out and tags Dynamite, who mows through the champs as the crowd is all fired up. Dynamite whiffs on a charge and hits into the corner, and then stands up and chops Smash and makes a tag in a funny spot. The ref is losing control as Davey fends off the champs. Davey hits a power slam, but things get fucked up as someone clearly missed a cue because Smash didn't kick up, but the ref just stops and runs across the ring. The ref then gets bumped and Fuji gets in the ring. Al's convinced the Bulldogs are champs throughout all this as the Rougeaus come out and attack, allowing the champs to retain as the ref recovers and Smash covers Davey for the win. This was a lot of fun. It was a very unique structure. A rare third heat segment that you don't usually get. All the comebacks and fakeouts I thought were well done right up until the end. And I really thought it's too bad they fucked up the finish as much as they did, because it killed what was really building to a hot conclusion. Demolition is so over right now. The Bulldogs got the crowd behind them, against them. I thought the tag division is really loaded right now. We talked about the Rockers coming in. You know, we had another team coming up soon. The Rougeau is going heel. So the tag division is really settling in. And the Bulldogs, to their credit, guys, I want your thoughts on this after you talk about the match. Like, are you surprised they're still hanging in the title picture? Because I did not think they were this relevant this late. So it's cool to see that they're being kept in the mix and used to get Demolition over. So I went 3 stars on this, Scott. I enjoyed it just as much as the Rockers match earlier. I really like the structure to it.
I did as well. I gave it I gave this 3.5 stars too.
Oh, wow, 3.5.
Just like the other match, for different reason. Obviously a different match than the earlier one, but I mean, the Bulldogs, I mean, this is the first time we've seen them in a while really, you know, show some oomph again. And this is probably the first time we've really, I mean, yeah, we had the match at WrestleMania 4 with Strikeforce, but they only got, what, 10 or 11 minutes. By the way, this match, guys, this match was actually longer than the last match. This match was 20-25.
Jeez.
Yeah. So kudos to Axe and Smash for being able to kind of get their way through this. I really enjoyed it because it gave Demolition, your tag team champions, a legitimate showcase here against arguably, you know, one of the two or three best teams in the company's history. And at the time, at the moment. And they really paced themselves well. I really just enjoyed the back and forth. They were very energetic. They were paced well. Mm-hmm. When you didn't think they could. And Bulldogs looked really good. And this was a moment for Axe and Smash to really shine as a solid heel team and your tag team champions on the big stage. And that big stage was Madison Square Garden. Obviously, they're going to be well, we'll see if they do defend their titles at the big show coming up in a month. But this was actually maybe the most important match for Axe and Smash to this point against a big, good athletic team that are a solid back-and-forth group. And I just really enjoyed it. The tag work was just so great tonight and just gets you excited for what's to come. Mm-hmm. Because obviously some of the tag teams in the division are getting up there in years. And
yeah,
and,
we're really starting to, like, you know, we've had kind of a strong era of tag team wrestling in WWF, but now we're kind of hitting the peak, right? The top of the mountain is, you know, over the next two years, 88 to 90, really. Is when these teams really come into form and the tag division is just loaded. And we'll see it over the next, you know, whether it's WrestleMania or other cards where they have, you know, four or five tag matches on a card. You know, so it's like crazy to think about the depth they were showcasing. But it's coming to fruition here. We're really hitting the golden age now.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it is, again, some of the teams that have been at the pinnacle early on are getting older. The Sheik and Volkoff obviously have broken up, and, you know, the Bees are kind of hitting the end of their run. So now you're bringing in some fresh blood. We saw the Rockers earlier. Demolition is reaching that point now. And, you know, the Bulldogs are still fairly viable. You don't know how – there's really no shelf life for them, at least at this point you don't see it. I'm really excited. It's a good time right now, particularly on this night anyway, because we don't have Savage. We don't have Honky. They're both in the other town. They're in Columbus, Ohio. Obviously, Hogan on hiatus. So this is a great opportunity. These couple of MSG cards, Kel, have been a great chance to kind of showcase some new blood and to showcase some beefing up of the roster. And I think it's a big success so far, particularly in the tag division.
Yeah, no, the tag division was super stacked at this point, and it only gets more stacked in a few months. The Bulldogs, I mean, they were still, like, if you think about it, they're both really young still. Dynamite got hurt, though, so that shaved years off his career and makes him seem older. But Davey Boy is still a major player in 1997, right. I mean, almost 10 years later. And they'd been around since 85 in the territory. So, yeah, they felt a little older than they really were. But this is a really good program because it's the new champs against the old champs. And the Bulldogs, the way they lost the titles was so unfair that you always thought, or at least I did, that they always had a chance to win them back, that they should get the titles back. Because it was unfair. The title reign was ended early. They were super over still. So this is a good program. The crowd probably really bought into the possibility of the Bulldogs winning, getting the titles back. So you had really good heat here. Superstar, his commentary tonight was, I mean, I remember him being way worse at times than he was tonight, but he still had some gems throughout, and in this match, he said Mr. Fuji was from Hong Kong, Saigon, and then Tokyo. Yeah, okay, they're all the same.
Well, that was like last month where he was doing the island, all the islands or whatever. He kicked
it. Yeah. This had a unique structure, like you said, JR. You know, Dynamite gets a hot tag, but he gets cut off right away on his House of Fire. Davey suffers the same fate later on, and the demos just are continuously beating down on the Bulldogs. And finally, we have a hot, you know, stretch at the end. The crowd's really into it. Davey hits the power slam, big pop. Maybe we're going to see a title change. And then, yeah, unfortunately, longtime referee Dick Kroll botched the count.
Bad.
Or maybe the wrestlers didn't get into the ring to break it
up. That's what I think happened.
Because he was, you know, waiting and hesitating and then had to stop just for no reason.
It definitely was very disjointed.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It looked like one of the demolition or Fuji didn't get in there in time.
Yeah. So that sucks because that otherwise kind of derailed what was a really good match. But then you get the continuation of the story earlier with the Rougeaus and Bulldogs feuding, playing into the finish, totally screwing over the Bulldogs. Lord Al is, you know, he's totally behind his countrymen. At the end, he's screaming. He's more animated than you'd ever usually see from Lord Al, screaming, no, 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 when the demos get the pin. And still, though, enjoyable match. I went 3 stars. I'm a big fan of both teams, and this was a good match.
Exceptional. Sure. With that, why don't we take a breather, JR? We're 5 matches in. I gotta say, Pete's gonna hate us because I goofed with him last week, Kel, that you weren't gonna be handed any pieces of shit that's left for him, and I don't think we've had one tonight either, huh?
No, definitely not.
You know, what do you think, JR? Not bad so far, right?
Yeah, no, it's been a good show. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah. Not bad start.
So we'll take a break. We come back. 3 matches to go. We'll keep pumping up this mysterious, well, it's not mysterious, but this new fancy SummerSlam show that they're talking about for next month. 3 matches left, including our big main event that I thought I was going to dread, and maybe I don't. But first, let's take a break.
Good.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a vertical podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Just when I believed I couldn't ever want for more, this ever-changing.
All right, Nash, we are back taking a look at the July 1988 Madison Square Garden House Show. Kelly Nelson in the house along with Scott and I. Scott, like I mentioned earlier, you're doing some hard labor out there over the past week, putting in the hours, mm-hmm. digging up some mulch, yeah. moving some bricks. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I saw you in the corner, you know, I was walking by and I saw you with a tear in your eye. You said, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's a lot. Put a lot of time and effort in. And Anthony came over and giggled and said, you know what, Scott? Hold on to the Knights. And you said, I'm gonna stick with it. Speaking of holding on to the Knights, that is the number one song in the nation tonight. Richard Marx brings us into our pop culture corner. Scott Griscola.
If that ever happened in real life, I'd rather be buried in mulch. anyway, yes, JR, thank you. And it is, with the show being a Monday night, two days earlier, July 23rd was the newest release of the Billboard Top 100. And indeed, the sultry voice of the awesome Richard Marx at number one with Hold On to the Night. Number two, we'll pour some sugar on me, and I don't want to think of Armento with that either, from Def Leppard at number two. Number three, New Sensation by INXS. Good song there. And Kel, I can see you cranking some INXS in the car,
yeah.
driving through a Medicine Hat or something.
That was only 1999 tape. He had that on.
Yes.
right when it came out.
I was living in Saskatchewan, yeah, but yeah. Alberta was a bit more sophisticated.
At number four, A Roll With It by Stevie Winwood.
It's funny because Kelly was asking me the other day, he's like, so why did you call this the greatest song of the 80s? Why don't you just call it the greatest current hits tournament?
Number one song right now on Prodigy. At number five, The Flame by Cheap Trick. Number six, number six, Hands to Heaven by Breathe. I don't even know that song. Number seven, Make Me Lose Control by Mr. Eric Carmen. Number eight, Mercedes Boy by Pebbles. Number nine, Sign Your Name by guess who, guys? Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Yes.
He actually had a second top 10 hit.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He threw a penny in the wishing well and happened to luck out with a second song.
Yes, he did. And at number 10, Rush Hour by Jane Wiedlin. Of course, Jane Wiedlin, more famously known as the guitar player for the Go-Go's. Hmm. And this was her lone solo hit. She obviously did not do as well as the other girl in the Go-Go's, who we'll hear more of probably in 1989.
Christy
so there's your top 10. What's that, Jer?
Christy McNichol, was that her?
No, Christy McNichol. No, Christy McNichol. So number one, Little Richard Marx action. Mm-hmm. Hold on to the night. All right, the previous Friday, JR, July 22nd, three movies came out.
Okay.
Including arguably the most ill-conceived and probably not should have been done sequel in the history of movies. But we'll get to that in a minute. Our first one, JR, I'm assuming you, little 8-year-old little JR, right? No, you were about, you were still seven and a half, I guess. Maybe you're a little too young for this, because probably the humor would have gone over most people's heads. Speaking of sequels, this one actually not as bad. It is Big Top Pee-wee.
I definitely didn't see it in the theater. I know that. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I saw it at a fairly young age, and I did watch Pee-wee's Playhouse. But I know I've seen this, but maybe just like once.
Well, Pee-wee's Big Adventure came out in 85.
Yeah.
So that I'm sure you watched in the theater on TV at home, because you would have been only five.
No, definitely.
Yeah. So.
But that one I've seen a bunch. So Pee-wee Herman has a dream of being a famous singer, makes an exit by disguising himself as Abraham Lincoln. One of the fans asks him for his autograph, but the disguise is promptly exposed. They chase after him and he flies to his ranch, where Pee-wee finally awakens from his dream that morning to work on his farm with Vance the pig. Later, he has lunch with his fiancée, school teacher Winnie Johnson. Next, he races Vance to a general store owned by Mr. Ryan to order a cheese sandwich. And I'm just going to stop because none of this makes any fucking sense. Starring Paul Rubens.
He's going to order a cheese sandwich?
Chris Christopherson, Susan Tyrell, Jade and Jeremiah, Valeria Galino, Penelope Ann Miller, Wayne White. Let's see if there's anyone else in this thing. And
Danny Elfman, the music, though. That's interesting.
Benicio Del Toro played Duke at the Dog-Faced Boy. Joe Gibbs, roustabout clown. That's about it.
Coach of the Redskins?
It's Joe Gibbs.
Wow.
But thank you for getting the joke. Yeah, Danny Elfman did the music.
Yeah, he did. So, all right, well, we were talking about sequels. I did talk about sequels. That one was not what I was referring to. Look, I mean, obviously not all sequels are, you know, The Godfather Part II or, you know, The Empire Strikes Back. But some awesome movies should just be left alone in a time capsule of greatness and should never have sequels made, even thought of. Well,
it's
sadly, somebody did, and they did this pile of God knows what. Caddyshack 2.
Back to the Shack.
Which I just find utterly offensive. But go ahead, JR.
Kate Hartounian is the daughter of wealthy and widowed real estate developer of Armenian and Jewish descent. Eager to improve her lot in life, she makes friends with Miffy Young, a snooty WASP girl who encourages her and her father to join a country club. Kate and her father, Jack, apply for membership at Bushwood, the club from the first movie. Jack is a self-made millionaire, yet remains self-effacing, friendly, and generous despite his wealth. His crude personality foils him on many occasions. Starring Jackie Mason, Robert Stack, Randy Quaid, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Jessica Lundy, Jonathan Silverman, Marsha Warfield. A lot of big names.
Mm-hmm.
Caddyshack 2.
Randy Quaid is in it. Dan Aykroyd. Chevy Chase is only in it for like 10 minutes. This movie is a piece of shit.
Tim Stack is the man, though. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Robert Stack. I was thinking of Tim Stack. I like Tim Stack.
Robert Stack is awesome, of course. This was 2 years before he was a year into his run as the unbelievably awesome host of Unsolved Mysteries. But this movie is a fucking piece of trash. Dan Aykroyd tried to be like the same character as Carl Spackler, Bill Murray was in the first one, and it was abysmal. It just fucking sucked, and there should never have been any need to ever make a sequel to arguably the funniest movie ever made. So it was this was bullshit. So anyway, let's move on.
It had a budget of $20 million and made $11.8 at the box office.
Yeah, it made it should have made $11 is what it should have made. And finally, a movie I've never heard of, JR, so I'm looking forward to you describing it to everyone. It is called Mr. North.
Okay, is it about Peter?
Never heard of it. Like Andy. Oliver.
In 1920s Newport, Rhode Island, Theophilus North is an engaging, multi-talented, middle-class Yale grad who spends the summer catering to wealthy families of the city, becomes a confidant of James McHenry Bosworth, a tutor and tennis coach to the family's children. He also befriends many from the city's servant class, including Harry Simmons, Amelia Cranston, and Sally Boffin. Complications arise when some residents begin to ascribe healing powers to the static electricity shocks that Mr. North happens to generate frequently. Starring Anthony Edwards, Robert Mitchum, Lauren Bacall, Harry David Stanton, Virginia Madsen, Mary Stuart Masterson, Angelica Houston, Tammy Grimes. A lot of names in this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Set in Newport. There you go.
Don't you find it's funny that it's set in Newport, Rhode Island, and somebody's last name is Cranston?
Yes. There you go.
Right. So clearly, John Huston's not from Rhode Island, so I don't know.
It was based on the 1973 novel Theophilus North by Thornton Wilder.
Is Thornton Wilder from Rhode Island? it just seems funny that they're in Newport and somebody's last name is Cranston. I just find that funny. Anyway.
Let's find out. All right, Thornton Wilder is from Madison, Wisconsin. But, Scott, do you know where he died? Wow. Okay, this is a huge recurrence right here. The date he died on and where he died.
The date he died on. Oh my
and
God.
Where he died is after 497 episodes of massive recurrence of our partnership. He died on December 7th, 1975 in Hampton, Connecticut.
So you're
my birthday
in a town I lived in.
Right. Isn't that crazy? What are the odds? Of all the dates and all the places this guy could have died
to be as great as Josh Richer.
Yeah,
I tell you,
it's a huge returns right there.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
We forever bonded right, so by Thornton Wilder.
Okay, so there you go. So there were your three movies that came out the previous Friday. Major League Baseball on this Monday, there was 8 games in action. All of our teams were in action. John Candelaria, the Candyman, picked up his 11th win. The Yankees beat the Brewers at the stadium 3-2. Mets lose in Philly. 3-2, and the Blue Jays, looks like a late loss, Kel, because Tom Henke took the loss, 5-4 in Minnesota to your defending world champion Minnesota Twins. The standings as we speak, the Yankees leading the East, but a tight race, JR. Yankees are 56-40, a half game ahead of Detroit, a game and a half ahead of the Red Sox. The Blue Jays are 49-51, 9 games out, and the only team worse than them is our good friend Peter Winson's trash bag.
The more things change, the more things stay the same.
An epic. The Orioles, what is their record now? Well, they beat the Mets tonight.
They're like 50 games.
But, they were 25.5. Right now, at this stage, the Orioles were 31-66. So I wonder what their record was.
They're
79 games.
I think that's a lot better than this year's version, actually.
But anyway, the Blue Jays were 2 games under 500 at 49-51. Oakland leading the West at 61-39. The Mets leading the East by 2 games over the Pirates. And the Dodgers were leading the West by 5.5 games over Houston and 6 over the Giants. And that's it. Quickie tonight. That is our pop culture corner. Back to the garden, JR. Lord Alfred Hayes is backstage.
He is backstage with Jim Duggan. He's hyped for his huge match tonight. Knows how big Andre is, but he's ready for him. He's knocked him out once before. Al's then with the Bolsheviks to talk about their big challenge laid in front of them tonight. They shit on America while talking about destroying the competition and taking the tag team titles. He's then with Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan. Bobby bags on Al and sets the stage for the main event. Says Andre's never run and he can't get thrown from the ring. Andre talks really clearly here and calls out Al and then Duggan while doing this creepy laugh and stare, which is pretty awesome. I want to talk a bit about Andre later because he's really kind of developed more into this, I don't want to say comedic, but like he's really kind of embracing just what he is and like kind of not as serious, and it's really funny. Al then talks to the Rougeaus who are celebrating with their little mini flags. They keep up their obliviousness and talk about how the fans are receiving them well. They ignore Al's talking points and say they're excited to come to the U.S. Jacques and Ray tease where in America they're moving, and they say they will take care of the Bulldogs. Jacques says to call 1-800-FABULOUS to cast your vote on where they should move. And that brings us to our next match, and that is the debut of the Warlord and the Barbarian, the Powers of Pain, taking on the Bolsheviks, Boris Zhukov and Nikolai Volkov. Of course, the Powers of Pain had been in Jim Crockett, and then jumped ship here, and they had been feuding with the Road Warriors, and they kind of left hastily, right, Kel?
Yeah, the story goes that they were booked to lose like a series of scaffold matches,
right, like,
so that meant, of course, they were going to have to take bumps off a scaffold every night, so they're like, fuck you, we're gone. Yeah.
And they bolted, and Vince was more than happy to take their juiced-up arms into his embrace.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
No here, doubt about that. And insert them into his tag team division. So big MSGW here for their powerhouse team against the increasingly clueless Russians. The Powers of Pain charge the ring and unload to a pop, mowing through both Russians and riling up the crowd. Mooney reads the inscription on Barbarian's tights. Mess with the best, die with the best, die with the rest. And Al deadpans, oh, some motto. Barbarian and Nikolai start things off, formally with a power stalemate, as Graham says Barb's facial structure. Oh, it was actually this one, Kelly. This is what I was thinking. His facial structure looks like he's from Fiji or one of the South Seas areas. A Samoan,
yes.
A Tonga, Fiji, New Zealand look of some sort.
Yeah, I just kept throwing out countries.
I was thinking that was last show, but yeah, here it is. Al no-sells that as Gramps is wherever he's from and has big gyms, which is funny. Boris tags in and Barbarian drops him with a shoulder block, and it's a nice power slam and then clears the ring. The powers of pain continue to dominate with their powers. Gramps says they're just as intimidating as Demolition. Nikolai returns and whiffs on a clothesline and eats a hard boot. Barbarian comes up empty on a charge, slams shoulder first to the post, giving Nikolai a chance to land some strikes. The Russians tag in and out and slug and choke away where they can. Barbarian comes back with a double clothesline and tags Warlord, who just cleans house. Things break down until Warlord hits a power slam on Boris, and Barbie comes off the top with a headbutt for the win. I thought this was an awesome debut squash. The powers of pain look crisp and on point. Their presence is amazing, and they just destroyed the Russians. This was a really, really good debut for them and a big addition to the tag division. And I liked him in this face roll. This monster's coming out and wrecking shit. I went a star and a half on this. I really liked it as a squash match, Kel.
Yeah, I did too. As an effective squash, makes the powers of pain look great. Barbarian especially, looked really good in this one. But you guys are in for a treat because this is the first in a trilogy between these
yep.
teams for the next three shows, I believe. Your WrestleFest and SummerSlam.
Sure
you
is.
Know, it's, people talk about Flair and Steamboat in 89. I don't know. Powers of Pain and Bolsheviks in 88 is... it's up there.
You've been gone too long.
yeah. But that being said, I've seen all three matches, and this is probably the best of the three matches.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I went one star. Maybe I should have went a little bit higher, because it was actually, yeah, it wasn't effective. Squash, and the crowd was into the powers of pain, and it totally served its purpose.
Yeah, I gave it a star and a half myself. Your runtime 7:37, and just another example. I mean, that's obviously the with the champions in other well, with the two singles champions in another town, and you know Hogan off and everything. The theme. Clearly, guys, at the Garden tonight is beefing up this tag division.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had our third tag match with a new team and another team that's just kind of getting started in the Bolsheviks. And suddenly, I mean, six tag teams tonight. The Rougeaus, the Rockers, Demolition, the Bulldogs, Powers of Pain, and Bolsheviks. That's just them. And we're not talking about the Bees and a
right.
bunch of other teams. The
Heart Foundation.
The Stallions, the Heart Foundation. And we still have, as Kel mentioned, we got a little bit more to come that we'll get into later on in the year. Tag division right now is fucking loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And Demolition needs to look over their shoulder because everybody's gunning for them now. And again, in the past, when you know we had the U.S. Express and we had Sheik and Volkov and then Dream Team, and you know the tag division was kind of maybe there was like 3-4 teams maybe. But now you're looking at 6-8 teams more coming. This is incredible. And what a renaissance. For the tag division, as we go back, you know, you hearken to the days of, the Valiant Brothers and Fuji Saito and Tito
Wild
and Putski
Samoans.
And yeah. The Samoans, yeah, just so many fantastic teams.
Mm-hmm.
And now here, realizing, and this is a good smart thing for Vince and for the company because obviously, as Hogan is getting bigger. And he's going to be this probably, if, you know, hindsight's 2020, probably not the last time Hogan's going to be taking an extended time off for something outside of wrestling. He's a big fucking star. So when, you know, whenever, you know, every once in a while, they're going to have to kind of shuffle around the main event and the mid card. Now you've got this fucking loaded tag division.
Mm-hmm.
So most shows you can throw in a minimum of two really great tag matches. And maybe more, depending on how you spread out the roster. On this night,
yeah,
and on this night, all the good tags were here
mm-hmm.
again because the meat of the singles roster were elsewhere.
Yeah,
no, this match,
it's a salient point for sure. Like so, you know that they can just eat up hours on a card with the tag division and have it be quality. I mean, I think it's a really good point, and I think there's two takeaways from the show. That's one of them. And then the other to me is the overhauling of the roster, right? We're seeing transitioning of the roster, and it's going to continue, but we're seeing a lot of new faces, a lot of new names, and we're going to start to see some flushing out. So I think it's three interesting points for me, Scott, that we're going to track. One is how the tag division develops.
Yep.
Two is the continued overhaul of the roster. I think it's going to get to, you know, 85 levels with 88 into 89, where we start to see the next generation of guys show up as these other ones fade. And then also, you know, how the Powers of Pain develop as a team was interesting to me, because I want to see what makes them do what they do later in the year. Because right now they're awesome as faces, but I also know Demolition has this uncontrollable wave of popularity as well. So I'm curious to see, like, where we stand with both guys, with both teams, when we get toward the end of the year. Like, to me, that's interesting.
Absolutely. And specifically this match, yeah, you're right. Powers of Pain. You know, everybody says that that Demolition was the Road Warrior knockoff that Vince invented. But the reality for me is Powers of Pain, Head and Shoulders, looked more like Hawk and Animal than Demolition ever did. But having said that, I think they're a team that almost works a little differently than Demolition. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they take out the Bolsheviks here, who are a fine team in their own right. You can plug them in anywhere.
Demolition's more ground and pound, whereas and I think that probably more to the point as well, where they're more like the Road Warriors, Powers of Pain, because even their squash style is like a little bit more energetic, a little bit more high flying in a way. Like, you know, for big men, high impact. Whereas Demolition was just like put you on the ground and just club you, you know, like that. That's more them.
Right.
Powers of Pain are more like the Road Warriors in that they are much more bouncing around the ring. You know, taking guys' heads off with boots, flying off the top, you know, like that. That's more. So I think that's the comparison as well there. And I think that's why they do stand out from Demolition and why they got over. Like, the squash was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just another example of how what the you know, the company right now is thinking about the roster, that with the future, there's going to be times where the singles divisions, the mid-card and the main events are going to be in transition. The tags are going to be just this foundation that they can lean on when they need to. And tonight's another example of it. This is the third solid, I mean, star and a half, you know, relatively speaking, but still a solid enough tag match that, again, gives a great example of, as you mentioned, the expanding of the roster and, you know, what the company's thinking about over the next, you know, year plus. So, solid enough match and another great debut.
All right, let's roll on. Two to go. Next up, we have the arrival of the new king, and that is Haku, crowned by Bobby Heenan, like we talked about earlier tonight, taking on Special Delivery Jones, still clinging to this roster somehow.
Woohoo!
Ole as a D rolls out for Kelly.
He got more nominations than Terry fucking Taylor, didn't he? Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you know, he was like number 50 on your list.
That's right, damn it.
Bobby comes out alone and gives a big formal glowing intro for the new king, Haku, while also dumping on Hulk Hogan for hurting Harley Race. The king has the royal music and showered with booze. Haku stomps away to open his gramps as Bobby was greedy. Should have waited for Harley to recover and come back to reclaim his crown. Bobby pops in the booth to share some thoughts about the king while dumping on MSG. Jones gets some offense, but eventually comes up empty on a kick. Gains control again, gets a nice backbreaker to send Haku to the floor. Al says Special Delivery is down 30 pounds. As Haku returns and lands a thrust to the throat. And I love how Al's taking over the weight gimmick from Gorilla with how much weight guys have lost and gained. He unleashes more karate and a shoulder breaker for one. Haku goes to a nerve hold, mixes in some martial arts strikes in and out of the ring. Jones mounts a basic comeback, but Haku levels him with a savate kick for the win. Again, another squash. I thought it was fine. Jones is fiery at times. Haku is his usual self, just kind of cold and calculating, and resets his career with his new gimmick. As the Islanders are now officially done, Tom is gone, and the brief reboot with Siviafi clearly did not go very far. Scott, let's get both you guys' thoughts about the match, and then I really want to quickly just talk about Haku getting this gimmick. So just talk about the match first, though, Scott. I went one star on this.
I gave it a star and a half. I got to give a half star to the number four greatest wrestler in the history of WWE. No. That match was fine. It served its purpose. As for Haku, who, by the way, is that like the longest his afro like ever was? I mean, it was huge tonight. He may get the nominee for best hair later on, because his hair was incredibly poofy and his beard was finally. He looked very regal tonight. the reason I wonder if it was by default. I wonder if it was meant to go to somebody else. The King gimmick.
I don't know.
I mean, because I remember watching the Superstars when Vince and Gorilla were talking about it that night. Vince and Gorilla. Vince and Jesse. And everyone thought that it was going to be Rude that was going to be the King.
Ugh, that would have been terrible.
That would have been fucking horrendous. Thank God it wasn't. But I think it. I think it's an indictment of the trust that Vince had in Haku to be given a legitimate singles gimmick rather than just a guy who's going to be in Bobby's family and do dirty work and heavy lifting and such. Not his fault that, you know, Tama flaked out and left and that CBAffi was a useless pile of shit. So he should be rewarded with something, and getting a singles gimmick was the right thing to do. And, you know, what the fuck? Give him a chance. Bobby's his manager, so you don't have to worry about him having to cut major promos. You got Bobby, so there's no
and I think
concern
it's rude
there.
Because he's not – I mean, he's not going to get over as just Haku on his own, right? Like, I think he needs something coming off the tag team. And I think it's as good a hook as any to give him. And I don't think it was meant for anyone else. I mean, I know they kind of tease Rude, which would have been terrible. There's no point to do that. I mean, the King gimmick is good for – you know, it was cool for Harley because, he had such a legendary career and all that. But it really was meant for someone like this who kind of needed the hook at this point. And I think Haku was a fine choice. And plus, you can play up the whole, kind of King of Tonga, right? He was King Tonga for a while anyway. Yeah. So it's like it kind of is fitting. He's like, the island king. So I thought it was a good choice. Kelly, what did you think?
Yeah. He needed something because the Islanders were done. He couldn't just be a Haku because then he'd be just looked at as, a former one half of a tag team, floating around and not really doing anything. So giving him the King gimmick was a good idea. Harley couldn't work anymore. It's not like it was something that was super prestigious that, you had to put it on a top guy. And it was a chance to elevate Haku. Make him seem important. He's the king now. He just didn't have the charisma to pull it off fully. He needed to be able to cut promos, I think, to get over being a king and all that. But in ring, he was great. Mm-hmm. And his presence was great. I mean, like, you bought that he was legitimately a tough guy. But he just didn't have that heel charisma. But it was, I think, the intentions were good at first. And why not? It was a good choice to put it on Haku, I think.
Yeah, it definitely worked out well. No, it definitely worked out well. And I definitely feel that Bobby was a good key there. It's good because the King gimmick was perfect for his faction, his family. Right. And I mean, there really was nobody else. Yeah, Rude getting it would have been fucking horrendous. Could you see him walking around? I mean, he's already, like, awesome anyway, but you see him walking around with a crown and the fucking, the cape and everything. Nah, that would have been terrible. It was smart to put it on somebody who legitimately could have used the actual gimmick. So, worked out well.
All right, Fink comes out, runs down the full SummerSlam card, which...
I didn't talk about this classic match.
All right, hurry up.
I didn't really like this one. It was great to see SD at first because he's a tie to the old days at MSG. And Heenan came out and he definitely showed how it's done on the mic by introducing Haku, like super charismatic promo here, really got over the whole thing. But why did this match have to be 7 minutes or more than 7 minutes long? It should have been a quick squash. So Haku's snake bit as the singles at MSG. If you remember back in his King Tonga days, he had some pretty bad matches against, I think, Les Thornton and some of the other scrubs from that time. And boring chance in this match, and it was a boring match. I went dead. I thought it was horrible. Poor Haku. It should have been a quick destruction of SD, like SD was destroyed at WrestleMania 1, basically.
I think they were trying to fill some time, honestly. It probably would have been.
Totally. Yeah. Total time filler.
And considering the length of the matches and all the stuff Fink was doing, you wonder why they needed to fill time to begin with.
Well, I mean, again, it's a short card. It's only 8 matches, which is pretty low for us on these. I feel like we're usually at 9, 10, 11. It feels like
eight's
kind of low. So,
but I mean, one match almost 19 minutes, match over 20 minutes. But in any event, speaking of times, that match was 7:06. And I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but the Bolsheviks pop match was 7:37. So, so there you go.
All right, now Fink comes out, runs down the full SummerSlam card, which is interesting. How much they're really pushing this, because obviously tickets were going on sale and they were trying to get it, you know, as many people to buy in. But I don't think they had even announced, obviously, the main event on TV yet, like we mentioned earlier. So the folks here kind of get a whiff. I mean, I think it was fairly obvious, I'm guessing, that Hogan was going to be the partner. But we get the announcement here before it even hits TV that it'll be Hogan and Savage against DiBiase and Andre in the main event. So. Interesting. And speaking of main events, that brings us to Jim Duggan taking on Andre the Giant in a Lumberjack match. The crowd and Fink are hyped for this one. Lumberjacks are all introduced, pretty much everyone who's on the card tonight. Great heat and presence for Andre and Bobby, this is just awesome. They soak it up and they play it up, and Andre stands at ringside. Like that camera shot of him standing at ringside, just kind of glaring out to the crowd, just like the true boss that he is, just teases leaving to the response, and just, you know, we get all kinds of stalling. Bobby's ranting on the mic. I thought that was really, really cool. Graham says Andre looks disorientated as he's just standing around, but I thought he looked this calm and cool, just this glare he gave out to the crowd, just disdain. Duggan finally emerges to a big pop, and we get underway. Duggan gives a 2x4 to Morocco for safekeeping, and we get going. The crowd is raucous as Duggan rallies them, and Andre grabs him from behind and starts to choke. Graham jokes about King Haku being demoted to Lumberjack from King as Andre keeps choking and clobbering, keeping the hacksaw rattled. Andre keeps sitting down on Duggan's chest as Graham says Andre's been twisted around by Bobby. He's a wild animal now. Duggan uses some heavy clubs to get back into it, eventually knocks Andre to the ropes where he gets tangled up. Duggan pounds away as the crowd's just all fired up here. Andre eventually breaks free and hammers Duggan with right hands as Al says the Giant is sharp and alert. Andre goes to a chin lock and then fends off a comeback with a hard shot to the gut. Andre now goes to a bear hug, and Al says the crowd is giving the ho to rouse him. Duggan slugs away and hurts himself with a headbutt. Duggan eventually bites free and lays in a bunch of heavy blows and clotheslines to stagger Andre. He tries a 3-point stance but runs into a straight hard punch, and I love that spot. That was so well done. Andre rips off the buckle pad and throws Duggan into it and goes back to choking. Duggan ducks away, and Andre headbutts the metal buckle and slowly falls to his knees as Al and the crowd are going crazy when he falls. The ref gets tied up. Morocco throws Duggan the 2x4. He knocks Andre to the floor with it, and all the faces converge on the Giant. And then in a wild scene, Andre just batters them all as they come at him, just swatting them left and right. Andre crawls back in, and Andre punches him on a charge and then spikes him into the exposed buckle and drops an elbow for the win. Everyone gets in the ring, and Andre starts a fight. Everyone then takes off as everyone brawls. Duggan clears the ring with a 2x4 to close it out. This was a really fun, a wild match. Even though they barely used the Lumberjacks, which I was actually okay with, that they didn't go with the trope. I kind of liked that they went against it. Andre has an amazing presence, getting more vocal, too, and goofy, which is neat, and he's mixing up his offense. So it looks like maybe the surgery like gave him some new life last year or something, because he's definitely moving around better and seems like in a better mood. Duggan is super over, and it led to a real hot scene here. And it was a different main event than we're used to seeing, which was neat, too. A couple of different guys. You know, we don't get a ton of big Andre matches over the last couple of years here at MSG. So getting him and then Duggan in the mix was neat. I went 3 stars on this, Kelly. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did, too. I don't think I've ever seen this match before. And, I mean, I avoided it probably for years because I've never been a Jim Duggan WWF fan, just like you, Scott. That's one reason, but now watching it, Andre's so good. Great as a heel here, stalling, like you said, before he came out. I enjoyed the introductions of the Lumberjacks because you got some interesting reactions. SD Jones got booed out of the building pretty much.
Well, it looked pathetic. They had to watch him deal with that bullshit match.
He had just been in a match where he loses, comes out. He's been around legit since like 1975, I think. So he's way past his expiration date. Lanny Poffo was booed, too.
They don't appreciate a good supple man.
No. And like I mentioned, at the beginning, Terry Taylor introduced a complete indifference. Great heat for this match. That angle had gotten over really, really good. It was worked really well, too. Andre was limited at this time, but he worked smartly. Matt D at ProWrestlingOnly.com message board wrote about Andre in this era quite often, and he made some really good points about how he worked. And if you watch his matches from this time, he worked smart and was able to maintain an aura. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have to do much, but the matches got over, and he played a heel really well.
I agree totally. I think he's definitely revitalized himself. His offense has been varied too. He's mixing different offense and the smirking and the giggling. You know, like he's kind of like that. Adding that extra glance of personality has been a real good addition to his character.
Yeah, totally. It took him a while because he'd played face for so long, but it took him a while. But he's now in 1980. He's firmly heel Andre, where you almost forget that he was a beloved hero for so long.
Well, because even the initial heel turn was still kind of just like he wanted the belt. You know what I mean?
So it
was
exactly.
It wasn't really until he comes back from Survivor Series and he's just like out to kill Hogan and fuck him. It's like when he really you know, turns evil.
Exactly. He gets more and more evil with each passing month. And the finish was booked really well. And it was great how they didn't use the lumberjacks too much, because it played into the end when Andre finally is knocked out of the ring. And they were, you know, they were building to that spot the whole match. That was great. And so when he finally gets knocked through the ropes, the crowd pops huge. But then, you know, you think, oh, they're going to pick up Andre and throw him back in. No, Andre kicks all the lumberjacks' asses. Godzilla or whatever, just totally destroys them, enters the ring again, and then quickly rallies and defeats Duggan. Of course, he uses the exposed turnbuckle to cheat, but still, it was a pretty dominant finish for Andre, because they were still building him up. He still had big matches yet to come. And yeah, this was a really good match. I gave it 3 stars, too. Duggan looked good in defeat. It was a star-making performance for him in a lot of ways. He went toe-to-toe with Andre, knocked him out of the ring, and it only took underhanded tactics to defeat him. So, yeah, everybody came out of this looking good, and Andre was the big star, though. Yeah, really good match.
Your match time, 12:38, to wrap the night up. I gave this 3.5 stars, my third 3.5-star match of the night. I cannot believe I was ever going to give a Jim Duggan match this great, but it was a lot of fun. The match suited Duggan. This was his kind of match. Undisciplined, throwing himself all over the place, acting like a fucking psycho. This is fine because this is what he's best at. But Andre has just got the... Not again.
I was waiting for that. All right.
I'm knocking out of the limo, bitch. Hey, gave him a 5-star skibbity doo match. But yeah, not yet. Andre has the switch flip, though. I mean, he is amazing right now. I'm sure all these years, even as a babyface. Oh, Andre would definitely be in the car with Claire, that's for sure. Claire would look very supple in Andre's lap in a limo. But all these years, even as a babyface, obviously Andre gets it. And SD Jones! Even all these years as a babyface, Andre gets it. The guy is the business, you know. I don't think there was ever, and that's not a machine. That's actually him stuttering. He just gets it, and you know, you're right. Like you could have sympathized with Andre to a certain extent during the original part of the WrestleMania 3 feud with Hogan. But once he started taking money and becoming like a hired gun in a sleaze bag, then you got to see a good heel Andre. And I think that's where the corner turned. And we get the Andre we get now. At first I was like, I'm kind of surprised Duggan lost this match. And then I realized, well, you know, Andre's about to be in the big main event in a month. so we got to keep him hot. And Duggan can, you know, particularly it's a cheating finish, and Duggan could eat any of these fucking pins. It doesn't matter. So I thought it was, I thought the match was a lot of fun. It was very, very exciting and a lot of chaos. And I agree with you, JR. We didn't get the typical lumberjack trope of heels beating up the babyface and the babyface throwing the heel around. Like, I'm glad we didn't get that. And I'm glad we kind of got like a, you know, like a, just a good solid match where, by the way, there are guys around the ring. I just thought it was an exceptional match. Andre looked good. Yeah, even Duggan was kind of in his element. Superstar Billy Graham protecting the 2x4, but a good finish. And actually, when we'll get into when we do the awards, but one of the most well-structured MSG house show cards we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Under the circumstances, you know, no Hogan, obviously no Savage, that kind of thing. But we'll get to that in the awards. But just a really great finish to the show. Didn't matter. Like, this was one case where it didn't matter that the heel finished the show. Andre wins. Nobody cares.
No.
It was a fun
well,
final
Duggan
match.
Gets a shine at the end anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a fun – it's just a good, fun final match. It's not a stinker. So good way to end the show. Nice right. win for Andre. But Duggan looked very good.
Okay. Well, let's do some awards to wrap things up. So let's start with our match of the night. I went Duggan Andre. I thought we had three legit contenders on this evening, but to me that had the most heat, was the most well-executed. The finish was good. So I like that match the best.
I mean, it's tough for me. I've got three. I had three matches that were 3.5
yeah,
stars.
No, I had them all at three. So yeah.
God. I'll be a little different. I'm gonna go with Rockers Rougeaux's. Mm-hmm. I thought that was Andre and Duggan was very, very good, but Rockers Rougeaux's just had a good ripcord pull that gave us a taste of what was to come in the tag division. So I, even if it's their debut, I got to give it to that tag match. Kel.
Yeah, I enjoyed the two tags a lot, but I went with Andre and Duggan. It was the main event. It felt big time. The lumberjack stip was fun. I really enjoyed it.
All right, the Cousin Junior, the worst match of the night, I think an easy choice on this evening, and that's Haku versus Special Delivery.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP of the night. He's here. He's always my choice when he's here, and that's Andre the Giant. I thought he had the best presence of the evening. He was great in the match. His promo backstage and the intro when he came out. And the punch when Duggan goes with the three-point stance is great. The swatting of the lumberjacks. And then the end is on Harold too, when he triggers the brawl and then leaves as all the guys start fighting. Just watching out. So I thought this was his night. He was fantastic the whole time.
Yep, Andre for me too.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely Andre.
All right, the Elmer for the biggest loser of the night, the worst worker. I went Danny Davis. And I guess you may be able to talk me into SD Jones if either of you guys are confident in it, but Davis is just real bad. I mean, Brett really carried him in that one. I mean, he just – all his offense is shit. He just he can't even, like, cheat well. He's pretty bad.
Oh, I agree with you. I had said earlier in the show he shouldn't have gotten 9.5 minutes with Bret Hart. It was bullshit. He's fucking horrendous. There's no way that Bret should have had to sell anything for him, Kel. Nothing at all.
Yeah, no, Davis was bad, but I went with Jones. I mean, that was the second to last match. That was the freshest in my mind. And Jones wasn't good in the match against Haku. I just, that match I really disliked. So yeah, SD for me.
All right, best moment I had a little bit of trouble with because I named like six out of that Andre match that I could have gone with. But I actually went with the Powers of Pain finish to their squash win, which I thought the crowd was just like rabid for, and it was really well done. I almost gave the Powers of Pain MVP until like Andre's performance, so I still wanted to recognize them. So I went here with them here. I thought they had a real good showing tonight. It was a good debut, and I loved the whole match, and the finish was just really well done. So I gave it the kind of closing moments of that squash match.
I actually, even though I didn't make it my match of the night, I love the Andre punch out of the three-point stance. Mm-hmm. It was so nonchalant, like, fuck you, bonk. Like, it was so fucking Andre, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, whatever, wonk, see ya. So I just loved it, Kel, because it was so nonchalant. Mm-hmm. And Duggan sold it like he got hit with a fucking, you know, payloader.
I don't think he probably pulled the punch, is my guess.
Probably not, but I was awesome. He just lifted up that big fucking meat hook. The old Andy Flanagan hand and knocked him cold. I thought it was great.
I went with Andre beating up all the lumberjacks and just going back into the ring under his own power. I thought that was the best moment of the night. I loved that.
No, it was a good night, filled with some pretty fun moments. So, all right, the Morocco Award, he's here. It's going to be him, Donnie B, Donnie M.
Yeah, no competition.
He was fucking destroying that fucking tank top. Good grief.
I mean, Warlord is no slouch in that category either, but Morocco, yeah, the veins are just popping out. You can see them in the upper, in the nosebleed seats.
It's ridiculous. All right, worst hair. I went Axe. I thought his hair kind of has this weird poof going on. So I went with him. It's tough when Patera's not around. This one's going to get trickier and trickier. But
there is a shit ton of lousy hair tonight. What was up with Poffos? One thing that wasn't supple was that awful mullet. That was terrible. I mean, Haku's hair was out of control. I mean, it was like this fro was had a mind of its own. Oh man, I don't know, Kel. I may go after you pick. I got to think about it for a minute.
Okay, I'm going to give SD Jones the Triple Crown: worst match, worst worker, and worst hair for his flat top that just doesn't suit him at all, and he just had a real bad night as far as I'm concerned.
All right, I'm going with Lanny Poffo. I'm sorry, that hair is horrendous. Looks like a wig. It looked awful.
Okay, finally, out of 10, what's our final grade? I went 6 out of 10. I thought it was a pretty good house show, on par with last month, Scott. I went 6 last month. You know, there's no, again, similar last month, we didn't have like that great classic match, but we didn't really have too much, like, I didn't have any duds, I didn't have anything crappy. And we had three real solid 3-star matches on this evening. So 6 out of 10.
We had the 1 4-star match last month, the Savage DiBiase in the cage, but nothing else really stood out last month. But we had some tremendous tags, that great main event. I'm giving this a 7.
Wow.
It was really good. I mean, all three tags were outstanding. They didn't all get 3.5 stars, but even the Powers of Pain Bolsheviks match showed their great talents. That main event was really good. I can't even knock the grade down for Poffo's shitty hair or SD's shitty everything. This was a fantastic show. Well put together. A great showcase for the burgeoning tag division. And again, I continue to harp on this, but really the point needs to continually be made. When you don't have Hogan every day for this length of period of time, Randy Savage can only be in so many places. So on this night, he was in Columbus, and, you know, Honky wasn't here. So you needed to have really some kind of backbone theme to tonight's show. And in this case, it's the great tag division. And we ended up getting two really, really good tag matches. And then, a solid tag match, but again, a good showcase for a new team. And the main event was really, really good. Mm-hmm. So I got to say, it was one of the best MSG shows. I mean, you know, we look around, let's see, I gave January.
We've actually been on a good run, though, if you look since Mania. Like, the ones over the summer, since April, have all been, like, you know, mid to high. Like, we haven't really had shit ones. Like, with January, February were shaky, but since then, we've been on a good run. Like, we were kind of dreading this long stretch of house shows throughout the summer, but they've all been pretty solid. Kelly, what'd you have for a grade?
I went 6 out of 10. This was surprisingly solid.
Surprisingly supple.
Yeah, surprisingly supple. As well. The main matches delivered. The main event was fun. The tag matches were really good. Powers of Pain, good squash for them. Morocco and Valentine started off a little sluggish, but then it heated up and had a good finish. And the bad matches were predictably bad, other than Brett getting saddled with Davis, which sucked. But other than that, yeah, I mean, it was a decent show, for sure.
All right, that'll do it. Another MSG put to bed. Scott, of course, we're off next week, as we do our every other week now. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with WrestleFest 88. That'll be on Monday the 27th. And then after that will be SummerSlam and then episode 500. So we're going to finish pretty strong for our first 500 episodes with two big shows.
Yes.
I think very fitting. D'Amato will be here for SummerSlam, number 499, kind of one of the OG fans dating way back to 2011. So it's pretty cool that he'll be on our final vault of the 400s. And then episode 500, of course, on September 24th is the time you know, right now is the plan. That'll be our big trivia contest. We have like 20-ish, I think, or 22 people will be in this thing so far. So if you want to reach out and take part, let us know. We'll get you in. It is wide open for anyone that wants to participate. You just need to be free on that night, and you also need to have, obviously, Skype and a headset and be able to be on and be free for a while in that evening. So, Scott, anything you want to plug?
Well, of course, last week we had an exceptional episode of Main Event. We had the sheriff on, who, of course, we lauded. He probably did the early 88 house shows. He would not have gotten this one. And he talked about the Scenic City Invitational down in Tennessee. And then we did our TNA pay-per-view, classic pay-per-view recap. Next week will be the next our next main event. We'll recap the weekend, NXT TakeOver, as well as SummerSlam. And then we will have our next New Japan Classic match pick, which will be, and Steve Willey will put it up on our main event, on the main event page, one of two Jushin Liger matches.
Okay.
So keep a tabs on the main event Facebook page and vote for which match you'd like us to talk about. So that's coming up.
Also want to make sure to call out on the PTBN Pop feed, Scott, that you did a fine job on the debut episode of Freak Out Drive-In with Jennifer Smith. Listen to that. Even though I don't like scary movies, I still listened. And this is a good way for me to understand what happens in these movies without having to watch them. So I enjoyed, though. I learned a lot. It was an easy, breezy hour and a half. So nice job there helping her get that show up and running.
Yes, check it out. Big time.
Check that out. I had a brand new No Holds Barred podcast last night. We did talked about the Hart Foundation, like I said, and the New Foundation. Really just spotlighted on Anvil, his tag teams. We talked about the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. And also built our all-time SummerSlam card, Scott, of course, which you and I have done in the past, but it is real hard these days with 30 SummerSlams. We did it, but we went to bed with headaches, and I had one all day because of it. also, last week had a brand-new Wrestling War Zone looking at the go-home Nitro to Halloween Havoc 95 and the corresponding Raw. And then this week we'll be having Halloween 95 dropping toward the end of the week. So busy week on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. Check all those things out. Also check out the Pop Blast Jennifer, Tim Cable, and I did on GLOW Season 2. That's on the Pop feed as well. So be sure to check that out. And I will plug two other things for the website. Stacey O'Loughlin's Divas Deep Dive. Her new piece will drop tomorrow, or if you're listening to this today, on Wednesday. And also on Wednesday kicks off round two of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. So we've cut the field in half. I will now select 4 out of 10, every 10 songs. And then we'll get into the tournament itself, the bracket format from there. So be sure to vote. Kelly, you been voting that thing?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Check that out.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, now's the time to get it. Because like Aaron and I talked about, the kind of, you know, the bottom feeder songs are all out. So now we're into the top. Right. And like everything that's left is kind of legit. So start voting, Kelly, will you, please, tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will be part of the big trivia tournament for episode 500. I've thrown my hat in the ring for that. I'm a 5-time Brainbuster champion, and I think I finished 4th or in the final 4 of the last Halloween trivia. So I have the credentials, I have the experience. So I'm pretty confident that I can win this one.
And since you live in Canada, you don't own a keyboard, so you never cheated. So.
Exactly. It's all from the brain.
That's right.
All from the brain.
The key is making sure Steve Williams finishes second like he does in every trivia contest that he takes part in. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anything else you want to plug?
WorldCast is coming back after a few weeks off on the 22nd of August. It'll be our first anniversary, and it's also the first show of 1983. So it took us about a year to get through a whole year of 1982, and there were some tough times, a lot of bad matches. But we are now firmly into the Freebirds versus Von Erichs feud, and we're all looking forward to covering that in the coming months.
All right, so that'll do it. Be sure to check that out. Scott, like I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks with WrestleFest 88. Until then, everyone, do everything you can with PlaceToBeNation.com. Follow us on social media, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, PlaceNumberToBeNation, PlayStation.com/Amazon Shop with us as well. For Kelly and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you in a couple weeks. Everyone, take care.
Pete would never win worst hair.
sometimes.